versus Diamond, 19-4083.
May it please the court, my name is Brittany Franson. I represent the appellants, Hillary Ann Diamond Evans, and the estate and trust of Greg Diamond. Your Honors, life insurance benefits and retirement benefits are different and they have different purposes. And for this reason, we ask this court to reverse the lower court's decision and find that FERSA, which governs the TSP account at issue, does not preempt the state's post-distribution suit against Betty Diamond. A brief summary of why we're here. In 2013, Greg and Betty Diamond agreed on a divorce decree that awarded all interest in Greg Diamond's TSP retirement account to Greg Diamond. Greg Diamond passed away, and Ms. Diamond has since indicated that if the TSP account proceeds are paid to her, that she intends to retain them. And so the estate brought this suit saying that if asking for a declaratory judgment, saying that if she retains the proceeds, she will be violating the divorce decree.
Can you pull that up just a little bit?
Yes.
Thanks.
And the court below dismissed the estate's case, finding that FERSA preempts the post-distribution case. However, post-distribution suits in this case do not contravene a clear and substantial federal interest. Before a state law can be preempted, it must be the manifest and clear purpose of Congress that there's preemption. In addition, another layer here is that we're dealing with an area of state family law. There's actually a presumption against preemption in areas such as this, and state family law is not preempted unless it does major damage to a clear and substantial federal interest.
All those arguments were made to Hillman also, and the majority rejected those arguments, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. However, Hillman is different because Hillman was dealing with a federal life insurance case.
And so, and that's what I want to get to. So your argument is that FERSA involves retirement benefits and the three other Supreme Court cases that the district court relied on involve life insurance, and that unlike life insurance, the Congress would have been concerned solely in FERSA with protecting the employee's benefits during his or her lifetime. Correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Is there anything that you can point us to in the legislative history or a case or even a congressional remark that supports that was the sole purpose of FERSA? It wasn't concerned with heirs.
So, Your Honor, there's not a case specifically that we can point you to. However, the burden is not on us to show the purpose. The court below said the purpose is to take care of the secondary beneficiary, but there's nothing that we're aware of that says that this was actually Congress's purpose in enacting FERSA. If that was Congress's purpose, then Congress would have made some allowance that said there are going to be some funds left over for the secondary beneficiary, and we're going to make sure they get them. There's nothing in the statutory scheme that shows that.
What about the order of the order of the priority that's laid out in FERSA? Isn't that on based on the text of FERSA, pretty clear evidence that Congress was concerned not just with protecting the worker during his or her lifetime, but also with regard to heirs? Otherwise, Congress wouldn't have bothered to lay out an order of precedence among who was to take whatever assets in the thrift savings plan.
No, Your Honor. So the order of precedence does tell the government this is where the money should go if there are any problems. It gives them, it speaks to the administrative convenience with giving them clear direction about where to actually distribute the money. But it does not mean that Congress wanted to make sure that these secondary beneficiaries both received and were able to make use of these funds. Because again, with a retirement fund, there's no guarantee that you're even going to have benefits at the end of it. Someone puts money in, and then when they retire, they take benefits out. And hopefully that lasts their whole lifetime. But if it doesn't, then there's nothing left at the end, and the secondary beneficiary doesn't get anything. And Congress made no provision for that secondary beneficiary to make sure that there would be any funds left over.
You just stated that the federal government's position is premised on administrative efficiency. Is there something in the some type of statutory history or something that says that?
No, Your Honor, we're not aware of that. We are analogizing to ERISA.
Okay, all right.
Which is another federal statutory scheme that governs private retirement benefit accounts. And in cases that talk about ERISA, they talk about administrative efficiency and giving people direction about what to do. And so we are analogizing to ERISA because we're dealing with FERSA here, which is also a retirement account. And the court below didn't want to look towards ERISA and looked instead towards these life insurance accounts. But this creates a strange and arbitrary distinction where the government says, we're going to regulate private insurance accounts this way, and we're going to say that you can have post-distribution suits in private insurance or private retirement benefits accounts, but you can't in government retirement accounts. And there seems to be no reason for that distinction other than courts started to rely on these insurance cases instead of relying on the ERISA cases. And it's error to rely on these insurance cases because in an insurance case, what you have is you have someone who purchases this this insurance plan specifically to take care of their beneficiaries. And if you go back and you look back far enough, some of these insurance plans go back to World War II. Congress was concerned about servicemen morale. So, and these servicemen are, you know, in combat and they can't get commercial life insurance, but they still have families they want to take care of. So Congress said, okay, we're going to create this life insurance plan for you to improve your morale. And to make...
Sotomayor and Hillman specifically said that Reasoner and Wisner did not rely on the improvement of servicemen's morale, right?
Your Honor, I actually believe that Ridgway does mention that.
It does mention it, but
yes.
Justice Sotomayor specifically say that Wisner and Ridgway did not rely on that?
Your Honor, I would have to look, but I actually believe that they did. And regardless, you still have this whole scheme, which is that we set this insurance account up specifically for this residual beneficiary. In a retirement account, you don't do that. You don't set up your retirement account to take care of your heirs. You set up your retirement account to take care of yourself. And so if you're relying on these other insurance cases, which are worried specifically about these contingent beneficiaries, it's just not a...
Where do you get that? Because if I were to just opine, I would say a person who has a decent retirement plan is concerned about their own retirement and what happens to the money if they don't draw it all out.
Yes, Your Honor. They are concerned. You are obviously concerned about the money if you don't draw it all out, but you're not husbanding the money or not spending the money specifically so that you can leave it towards someone else. The point of the money is to take care of yourself.
Isn't that part of estate planning? Is it that many people do because there's a tax benefit? There can be a tax benefit of passing a retirement account to an heir, isn't there?
Yes, Your Honor. However, there's still nothing in the retirement account that says that there's going to be a specific amount that's going to be left over for your heirs after you pass away.
Counsel, what's left over, it appears to me in looking at what the district court did below, that he said that under the thrift savings plan that not only did it belong to the person who had by court decree not be entitled to it, but he goes further and says that right is preempted. Aren't we arguing about preemption here, just like they did under the Sigla and the NISA, where you on the Wiser cases? Isn't that what the trial court did below?
Your Honor, yes, we are arguing about preemption. However,
well, now then, let me go a little bit further, because you've got three separate statutes, I think, involved in this. Whereas under Wisner and the other case, which was the Sigla and the NISA, they talk about preemption and why you can't get at that. But did you look at the FERSA statute on thrift savings and see if there's those same that same identical language used in so far as the thrift savings, the TSA?
So, Your Honor, the language that the court below was looking at was the statutory order of precedence. However, it's error to simply say this statute has the same purpose as these other statutes just because it has a statutory order of precedence. The law is clear that the bar is higher than that. You have to find the clear and manifest purpose of Congress. And a similar scheme that says, okay, if we have money left over, this is where it goes, doesn't mean...
That's not the scheme in this case. What you have in this case is that you have a pot of money, and that on his death, it goes to the ex-wife, who had voluntarily, under court decree and state court, waived any interest into that. And what the district court did below is said, no, that state court order has no effect because this money is preempted and goes to the named beneficiary that he never changed. Now, the essence of the way I read of what the trial court did is take away any action that the estate or children, whoever, of the deceased man of claiming an unjust enrichment claim in state court based upon the waiver that's clearly in the court. And the only way that can be done is if we say, yes, it is totally preempted. Right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, how do you get around? I mean, I've been hearing about... How do you get around that clear language?
So you're
as to the state not being able to even hear and enforce its own decree.
Right. So a couple of points, Your Honor. One is that if this case was brought under ERISA, there's pretty widespread...
Not brought, counsel. Don't tell me about ERISA.
Why this specifically?
Right. Yeah.
There's nothing in the statute specifically that says that this can't be brought, Your Honor. There's nothing that prevents the TSB from distributing these funds to Ms. Diamond and us bringing this claim directly against Ms. Diamond, which cuts out the government altogether.
Well, now, wait a minute, counsel. They're specifically, the TSA is only obligated to give the money to the beneficiary. The question is it preempted? Can no one else get at that money, period? And that's in essence what's happened. It's denied you, your client, the opportunity to say, wait a minute. You know, you're saying, court, if it is preempted, you lose, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I need to know how you get around preempt without looking at ERISA. I'm looking at the FERSA.
With just looking at FERSA, Your Honor, And to be clear, the court below found it was preempted also by looking at other statutes. So if you're going to rely on the insurance statutes, then it might be preempted.
Same thing about the insurance cases, right, as I have with ERISA. Those don't apply.
Right. So, Your Honor, if you're just looking at FERSA, just looking at the statute itself, there's nothing in the statute that says that the estate cannot bring a claim against Ms. Diamond. And it's not our burden to show that there's a purpose in there that's contrary to that. It is the other side's burden to show that there's a purpose in there that would be contravened and thus that our suit would be preempted. There's nothing in the statute itself that says that we can't bring this suit. And that's why it's not preempted. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Daniel Sam, attorney for Betty Diamond, the appellee. First of all, to state that the statute itself does not say anything about congressional intent as far as preemption is not correct. The statute itself does have a provision right at the beginning of the statutory order of precedence that bars recovery by any other person once payment's made. That, to me, can't be said any clearer. That's in the FERSA statute. That particular language does not appear in the insurance statutes.
But the language you cite, is it doesn't prohibit having an agreement, much like the agreement here or the state decree, does it? That language?
Your Honor, the it does...
Quote it again for me.
What's that?
Quote it again for me.
It states that payment bars recovery by any other person. That's at the beginning of the statutory order of precedence.
All right, so say Betty recovers here. That doesn't prohibit Betty from reaching an agreement with the estate saying, once I recover it, then I turn it over to you.
Okay, I can understand that reading, Your Honor. But,
okay, so it's not a really a preemption intent, is it?
I guess it could be.
It more or less falls in line with what Ms. Franson has said. It's for the administrative convenience, and that is, we're just going to distribute according to the documents we have on who the designated beneficiaries are. After that, have at it.
Yeah. In other words, like in the Hillman case, we're dealing with, in the Feglia case, Feglia statute in that case, which is an insurance case, dealing with the same argument. The widow in that case...
I understand, but let me get back to this. You were addressing Ms. Franson's argument that there is nothing in this statute that indicates there should be preemption. And I've told you a different view. Now, is there any further language that suggests preemption in this statute?
None that I can think of, Your Honor. I think we have the statutory order of precedence, which in of itself is... there are two purposes.
Let me ask you this question, going along with where Judge Murphy is. I have a thrift savings plan, and I need to buy a new home. And, of course, the lender is wanting collateral. And I give them a lien against my money that I have. And I die. Now, all the contracts are written and everything like this. The limit of what I read, the government has to pay the money to the designated beneficiary, and they're not required to do any more than that. So my wife is the beneficiary of my thrift savings plan. Mm-hmm. She gets the money. If it's preempted, then the creditor can't come and collect from that source of money to repay my debt. That's just that simple. But I'm looking at it from, and I just don't believe, because preemption under the law has to be spelled out actual clear and convincing in the statute, expressly stated. There can be a constructive preemption, which I assume that's what we're arguing about here. Mm-hmm. What in essence that would do, if you carried it to the point of where it says it's absolutely preempted, that creditor just loaned me the money to buy my new house gratuitous because they can't collect it. Is that your position?
That is my position, Your Honor.
Okay. If that's part of it's preempted, where in that statute, unless you say it's preempted, that a state court where I have a document that says I have no interest in that, where does it preempt then the right of the children of the deceased, so to say, to go against the person who the money was paid to? TSA's out of it now, unless it's clearly preempted.
Right.
So you're saying that under the TSA, it is clearly preempted. Betty gets all the money and nobody else can't do it. State of Utah, nobody can do anything about it.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's consistent with the Hillman case.
This isn't the Hillman case.
I understand that. We're dealing with a different statute here, but Hillman certainly provides instruction on a statutory scheme that is basically identical on congressional intent and also on policy considerations. What would be the purpose of establishing a strict statutory construction, a statutory precedence if it's subject to state lawsuit claims after the distribution is made?
But this is not only a state lawsuit claim. It's one in which the beneficiary named has waived in a state court any right, title, or interest to that money.
Yes.
That's why I'm pressing you on the preemption theory.
Yeah.
Because it's either got to be extremely clear that Congress intended to preempt that, or that you got to be able to get to a constructive type of preemption.
Well, Your Honor, that's one of the arguments that's made by the children in this case, is that there was a waiver. That's subject to debate as well.
That doesn't help them in their argument. What I'm trying to get around is how exactly does under the FERSA preemption apply? Mm-hmm. Because it's like I told her, if it applies, she loses.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make sure that that's where we are under this statute, that this claim is preempted forever and the children and the estate have no claim, even though they may go back to state court and bring an action.
Right.
It's preempted.
I think what the court has is, and I keep going back to the Hillman case and the cases that precede it, including the Ridgway, Wisner, and the Izquierdo case, which is also mentioned in our briefs. In Izquierdo, that one dealt with a retirement plan as well, and it followed Wisner. And Wisner is a case under Siglia, or a statutory scheme that predated Siglia. It found instruction in that case, just like I'm suggesting this court should find instruction in the case of Hillman, not only for the congressional intent, but also the policy considerations. We're dealing with identical statutory schemes, and how can you say that a insurance benefit or an insurance plan is that much different from a retirement type plan that you would disregard case law dealing with insurance type statutes, but that have identical statutory orders of precedence? And so that's what I'm saying is that what are the policy considerations? The policy considerations that are mentioned by Justice Thomas in the concurring opinion in Hillman. In his concurring opinion, he talks about proposition that a beneficiary be automatically transformed to a defendant. That's what would happen in this case. It would turn into a melee, so to speak.
How so? The divorce decree is pretty specific. What's the melee about it?
What's the melee about?
Yeah. You said this was going to turn it into a melee. I don't see. Counsel, we're not trying to beat up on you. We've got a real question here.
Yes.
That goes a long way, and just like the Hillman and the Wisner case does, it is absolutely telling heirs, and it's telling the state of Utah that in this instance, even though you've got a divorce decree that where the party says I waive any right title in, they're saying that has absolutely no value in federal court. you're just whistling Dixie. So when we write this, whichever way we go, and that's why I'm pinning you down so much as to the TSA, to the FERSA, mm-hmm. Do we really have exactly the same thing? That's my concern.
I think we do.
That's good. I'm wanting to hear why you think we do.
Because there's always a consideration in a retirement plan as to what happens if you don't use all of the funds during your lifetime. Where do those go? That's what the statutory order of precedence is. That's what the beneficiary designation is for. We see that in numerous other accounts. In other accounts, bank accounts, IRA accounts, they allow and provide for naming a beneficiary upon the death of the owner of the account. Those are subject to state law claims. There's no statutory scheme that sets forth a statutory order of precedence, like in this case under FERSA, that addresses those. But what are the considerations? There is a consideration similar to an insurance policy that you would want to take care of those individuals that you want to, in naming who would get the insurance benefits, who would get the proceeds left in a retirement account. I'd say the considerations are the same in Hillman as they are in this case. How do you get around Hillman when they're talking about an identical order of precedence, with all the policy considerations and all of the congressional intent that's discussed in the Hillman case? How do we not apply that in this case here? All of those are instructive to this court, but I do agree that this is a new statute. Not a new statute, but it's a statute where this issue hasn't been addressed yet. But the cases that we've cited in our brief, including Hisquierdo, which dealt with a retirement type account, reliance on Kissner.
Hisquierdo has a far broader statute than TSP.
Yes.
Hisquierdo specifically prohibits attachment. So then we're not talking about wives and children and domestic law. We're talking mm-hmm. about something completely different. We're talking about somebody who's owed a debt and they want to go after it with an attachment.
Right.
Hisquierdo says you can't do that, specifically in the statute.
Right.
This statute does not, does it?
No, this statute is different from the Railroad Retirement Statute Act. It's
I'm not sure you can shunt it aside that easily. Is it the breadth of the language is different, regardless of whether it's a retirement account or whether it's an insurance policy?
Right.
The breadth of the language, attachment in Hisquierdo, is much broader than the limited statute here.
Yes.
And that makes me think that you could have a post-distribution agreement. The estate and Betty agree, okay, you got the funds from the federal government, now turn them over to us pursuant to our agreement or pursuant to the decree.
Right.
What's wrong with that? I know you're not agreeing with me, but...
No, I don't agree. I think that going back to Hillman, we're dealing with a statutory order of precedence that's identical in Figlia. The language of Hillman is highly instructive to this case. I only mention Hisquierdo as an example of a case that relied upon an insurance an insurance case, Wissner, in its decision. But Hillman, I think, is highly instructive in this case, and I've run out of time. I thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, just in conclusion, Ms. Diamond decided what she wanted to do with these funds if they were ever distributed to her. In the divorce decree, she said they belong to Greg. And all the estate is asking is for an order from the district court requiring Ms. Diamond to follow through with that commitment. And for that reason, we ask this court to reverse.
Can I ask you a question about what Mr. Sam was telling my colleague, Judge Murphy? And that is, on the anti-alienation clause in FERSA, I thought that one of the two independent grounds that the district court found and that until now I thought your adversary was arguing was the provision in 8470 that says any amount payable is not assignable or subject to other legal process. It sounded like maybe I misread your adversary's argument. I thought they were relying in part on that provision, but to the extent that they are or haven't waived that, how do you get around that? That's a pretty broad anti-alienation clause. It doesn't just bar attachment, as in Esquerdo, but any other legal process with regard to any amount payable.
Yes, Your Honor. And I see my time is up. May I respond?
Sure.
So, Your Honor, similar clauses have come up before in different cases, especially in ERISA cases, and courts have found, and actually the Kennedy Court, the Supreme Court in Kennedy discussed this and found that anti-alienation clauses such as this are not applicable in cases of divorce decree waivers. For one thing, because it's difficult to assign something back to yourself, also, just because of the unique circumstances revolve around divorce decrees.
Wasn't that exact argument made in Ridgway and Wisner and rejected?
Your Honor, it might have been, but in Kennedy, that argument was made, and actually the Supreme Court found that argument persuasive in Kennedy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. This matter is submitted. I do.